Welcome to the Store Builders Podcast, the place where we talk to industry experts and successful store owners about what it takes to build a thriving e-commerce business. Every episode, we deliver the raw, unfiltered recommendations that will catapult your store to new heights. Ready to get serious about expanding your e-commerce empire? Well, then let's get to work.
I'm your host, Ryan Cowden, and this week we're joined once again by Chris Lemma. In this episode of the Store Builders Podcast, Chris and I discuss different types of business partnerships you can engage in and the advantages they provide. If you've been designing websites for a period of time, you've probably been approached with some offer of a partnership. It's common for people and companies to want to request your services and offer you benefits that don't take the form of traditional compensation. Maybe you have even extended some of these offers to others. While there is risk involved, it's also possible to engage in a mutually beneficial partnership. There are a lot of good, talented people out there that you have access to. So how do you know if a partnership is right for you? How do you set it up to ensure that it stays that way? In this episode, you'll hear what a partnership looks like and the types of partners you might connect with. Business partners may offer you equity or profits on the back end. Not all of these offers are worth your time, but some of them allow you to develop new skills or network with people who have skill sets that complement your own. Next, we'll talk about how to assess if a partnership is good for you. This involves assessing your own skills and needs and making sure that you have some credible people to help you assess new work situations. Then we'll discuss the need to set up healthy boundaries at the beginning. It's important to be explicit about communication and compensation. You should also be aware of the 50-50 split. It doesn't exist, and it's unwise to enter into. After that, Chris will share some booming industries that may be looking to partner with store builders in the coming years. The demand for store builders is going up, so get ready for a variety of offers as the economy adapts to these changes. On a related note, Chris shares the skills that will be in demand in these booming industries and how you can prepare for them. Finally, Chris addresses the power of word-of-mouth marketing that results from these partnerships. While millennials have an edge in knowing how to get the word out, the new power of word-of-mouth advertising applies to all age groups. No matter what age group you're working with, the referrals that result from your partnerships will be worth more than any of your own marketing content. If you're looking to establish some powerful partnerships this year, then this is one episode you won't want to miss. There's a lot of actionable advice in this episode, so grab something to write with because you're going to want to take notes. As always, I'll be back on the other side to wrap up any loose ends. So without any further ado, here's my conversation with Chris Lemma. All right, Chris, welcome back to the show. How you been?
I'm good, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to see you again. So we're talking about business partnerships this week. And I thought we'd just start off by kind of defining what is a partnership and what it looks like.
So the dynamic when it comes to store builders and partnerships is that I think we get offered equity or a piece of the back end all the time, right? So there's people who are like, oh gosh, you know what? Let me, you could be a part of this thing, right? And it's going to be a big deal. And we joke a lot that most of these are a waste of time, but the truth is some partnerships can be really, really good and very productive and generate a lot of both short-term and long-term revenue. So the real issue here is figuring out what kinds of partnerships make sense, what kinds of people to partner with, et cetera, right? On the one hand, you have really kind of simple partnerships where you're a software developer, you're a store builder, you're really good at the mechanics of building something, and you're not good at selling those projects. So you might build a partnership with someone who is regularly out there doing sales of more than just the development of that. Maybe you're talking about a partnership with a conversion rate optimization organization, meaning they're touching a lot of stores, but they don't do development of store features. And so there's a partnership there where they're finding the customers, they're filling your funnel, and you pay them, you share the revenue so that you can get the work. That's a simple kind of partnership. Again, you want to work that through. On the other side, you have partners where there's a store owner who is building a specific kind of store, and you are going to be the development side of it. You're going to be the technology side of it, and you're going to get an equity stake in that business. And then lastly, you have the kind of partnership where you're building stores for other people, but you need a technology partner to automate or to facilitate certain features, right? So for example, you need a manufacturing partner or you need a drop shipping partner to facilitate the overall store. So a lot of different kinds of partners that can actually make sense, right? But in order to do that, you need to be clear on, how you're going to go into this, how you're going to make decisions, how long it's going to last, what's the split, right? Mm-hmm. The short and quick version of it is it's never 50-50. So don't ever choose 50-50 because it'll never be 50-50. But if you can go into it with your eyes open about what it really is, it can be really powerful.
Okay. So you're saying if it's a partnership, you're probably not getting paid at all, or you're not getting paid your normal wage?
It depends on which kind of partnership, right? So for example, in the first case, if you have a partner that is doing the marketing and selling or the lead generation for you, you may get 80, 90% of the revenue from that client for the work you do, but you may need to kick back 5, 10% to your marketing partner, your sales partner, which again, if you don't have a cost of sale, if you're not putting feet on the street, you're not getting salespeople out, that's a worthwhile trade-off. But it does mean that you have to be clear about your margin, right? You're going to take a portion of your project revenue and likely part of your profit margin, and you're going to hand it to someone else. But in that scenario, you might get 90% of your revenue still from the work you do.
Okay.
On another kind of partnership, right? When you're dealing with a store owner, you're the store builder, you're the developer for the store, and they want to give you an equity stake, you may see only 50% of your revenue, right? Meaning, hey, for every $2 that I spend developing, you're only going to pay me $1, and I'm going to let the other 50% ride in this partnership with the expectation that I'll get monthly, quarterly, yearly dividends from the project, right? So you have to understand what the risks you're getting into. And then on the flip side, on the third part, if you have a partnership with a technology partner who is enabling a feature or implementing a feature, you may get 100% of your revenue, but the store owner is going to have to spend a portion of their revenue on whatever the service is, right? And in this case, you're a broker between partners, but you're going to step out and say, no, I'm still getting paid fully, right? So whether you make 50% of your work, 90% of your work, or 100% of your work is dependent on the kind of partnership you're building out.
Okay. Have you ever been in a situation where you've been contracted to do a gig and you initiate one of these partnerships to help you fulfill something for a client? Does that ever happen?
Yeah. Several different kinds of projects. One project we did where I did the work for free, right? 100% risk all on my side. But I got a portion of all the revenue that came in the front door.
Okay.
And in that particular case, the work was going to cost me like 2 days, 3 days of work. And the revenue potential was much better than my 3 days of work. So I said, I'll take all the risk, right? I did 3 days worth of work, right? Spread out over a couple of weeks. They launched their online business, and it paid for my entire honeymoon, right?
Oh, wow.
So it was awesome, right? Yeah. My wife's like, can we really stay here? You're like, don't worry about it. It's all covered, right?
Wow.
But for as often as that happens, right, you can also be in partnerships where things go sideways quickly, right? A 50-50 partnership, and then everybody feels like I'm doing more work than the other person. You get into a fight. That's not fun, right? And then you get into these in private pieces where you say, with technology partners. So you say, listen, I'm going to glue this and you're going to pay me to do the gluing, but the customer, the store owner is going to pay the technology partner for inventory or shipping or distribution, right? I had a client that was a bookseller and was working with another partner. Now, of course, I did our team did the glue to connect the dots, but then they had to pay that book shipper. And if there was a problem there, that wasn't going to affect me, my relationship with the store owner, et cetera, right? And
right.
So the real trick of this is just to be super, super clear up front on what everyone has to do in the partnership and what everyone is getting paid in the partnership and or what's being deferred, right? What are you not getting paid? And when do you expect to get it, right?
Okay.
I was talking to a, I smoke a lot of cigars. So I was talking to a cigar store owner who in the next several months will launch a new physical retail store, but he wants the website to match and to be able to do online sales in the same way that he has physical sales. And he was talking to someone who said, I'll take an equity stake in your business and cover all the hosting. Well, I work at a host, right? And I can tell you that's a bad deal, right? Hosting's cheap. In the big scheme of things, hosting's cheap. I would never give away a percentage of my business, which will hopefully go up and to the right, for what is a fairly commoditized price point, right? So in that scenario, I recommend to the store owner, I wouldn't give equity for that. I might give equity for other things, but I'm not going to give equity for what is just a commoditized price of hosting.
Okay. So it sounds like the real catch here is figuring out if this is a good partnership for you or not. Do you have any advice on how to figure that out?
Yeah. So the biggest dynamic is just what do you do well and what do you have no clue about, right? If there's some, you know, so right now drop shipping is big, manufacturing is big, private labeling is big, right? Private labeling, if you have a brand, a really strong brand, and people trust your brand, then getting into selling a physical product with your brand on it, right? Where you put your label on it, which is what causes it to sell versus if it had someone else's name on it. That makes a ton of sense these days, right? Ton of sense. So you're like, oh my gosh, I love that I'm here. I'm love doing this stuff, right? And so, yeah, I want to do it. But if you know nothing about private labeling, finding a partner who does, finding someone who is trustworthy, who's done it over and over again, finding where you can evaluate all of their track record and then stepping into a partnership with them is going to be a lot better than you trying to learn private labeling on your own for the first time. You'll likely make every mistake in the book and then you'll have burned away all your opportunity, right? Same thing with drop shipping, right? Like if you don't know what you don't know, how are you going to make this call, right? So working with someone who has a proven track record and that you can validate, right? Pet supplies are big right now, right? So you want to create a pet supply store. Great, but what do you know about pet supplies, you know, especially if it's manufacturing, right? So what do you know about bird cages? And you're like, no, I don't know anything. I just want to get into this. I want to do this, right? And you're like, right, but you went and interacted with a company in another country. You had no idea what the customs rules are, what the timeline, and you hear stories of people who are like, I put all my money into this and all my supplies are sitting in customs and I can't get it out and I have no more money to pay the fees and my store's dead, right? And you're like, yeah, what made you think you should do this on your own, right? That's a great place to find a partner, but you got to do your due diligence because the very nature of finding a partner for something you don't know a lot about also means you're going to have trouble validating whether or not what they're telling you is true. Right. Mm-hmm. So in essence, normally what I tell a store owner is find two people, right? The person who can validate the partner and the partner themselves, right? So in the case of the cigar guy, I happen to be a pretty serious cigar smoker. He and I hang out and he says, here's this technology deal I'm thinking about doing. And then I can give him advice because he trusts me and because I don't have a stake in that game. But now I can evaluate what they're saying and say, yeah, you can pay for the IT, but don't pay for the hosting, right? Don't give equity for the hosting because that's a bad call, right? So, but he wouldn't be able to know the difference between those two things, right? So find a partner who's credible and find someone who can help you evaluate that partner.
Okay. So going into these partnerships, what are the healthy boundaries you need to put in place?
So sometimes people want to partner with you so they can get your phone number. Right. So someone who is a store owner who is very non-technical, like hyper non-technical, they may say, look, I just want you to do everything. Right. So my the florist at our wedding, right? And this is now 15 years ago, but the florist at our wedding didn't have a website. We were trying to just hire her and pay her. And I'm like, well, can I look at your stuff online? Oh, I don't have a website. Okay. Can I pay you this way? Oh, I don't have that. Right. And you're like, okay, why don't I help you with it? Well, then it was, okay, I got to build the website. I got to load in all the images. I got to do the stuff. And then I said, okay, I'm going to send you the order from the website to your email. She's like, yeah, how do I read email? Right. So I had to go to her office and install like Outlook, right? And work on the LAN network. And I'm like, oh my God, this was insane. So if you're partnering with a store owner like that, right, you have to figure out how you're going to do the communication so that they don't call you every time anything technology-wise breaks, right? Because now you're their IT, like they'll say it this way. Oh, that's Chris, that's my IT guy. You're like, no, I didn't sign up for printers. I didn't sign up to fix your mobile phone or to update your phone when you get a new one. Or like, I'm building your store, right? And so drawing boundaries around who contacts who, what are the hours within which you contact, how often you contact, for some kinds of relationships, just the communication dynamic needs boundary.
Okay.
Other times, the boundary may be, or the dynamic expectations may be around the distribution of funds, right? You're doing a partnership, you expect to get paid. Well, how often are you going to get paid? And what's the deadline? Like if you're going to get paid in the month following the quarter, after the quarter's numbers are done, then it needs to be explicit. The quarter ends, right? At the end of 3 months, it'll take us 1 week to close the books on the quarter. And when we've closed the books, you'll have your check within another week. So 2 weeks after the quarter, I should have a check. Great. Let's define the boundaries so that we can all agree that this is the pace. And then they start going, well, I haven't closed the books yet. And you're like, guys, right? This is what we agreed to, right? So a lot of times it's just about managing expectation and defining those things in contracts so that the boundaries are clear and then you don't get into silly fights.
Right, right. So looking across kind of the internet and kind of some booming industries right now, are there any areas that you think people with this skill set should be looking to establish partners in?
Well, if you're a store builder, right, there's never been a better time to be someone who can build an online store, right? Okay. There was a period of time, right, over the last set of years where people were selling their stuff on Amazon, right? Like they were like, I don't have to build a website because I sell it on Amazon. I don't have to do IT stuff because I sell it on Amazon. I don't even have to worry about shipping because I just pushed to Amazon.
Yeah.
And now those same stores are realizing this might have been a really bad idea, right? Because Amazon collects all the data. Amazon is very intelligent about what people are buying. And so that super cool USB charger for an iPhone that you were making that you had gotten your own partnership with in China to fabricate, and you had dumped it all on Amazon and you were selling it. Now there's something called Amazon Basics, right? And Amazon Basics now sells your same charger, but for 30% less. And theirs is the premier one. It shows up at the top. And now they're taking all your business. And you realize, oh, I should probably leave Amazon and spin up my own store, right? Well, we're talking about tons, right? Like 5 years ago, Amazon had one, you know, or four years ago, they had like one private label piece. In the last year, in 2018, I think they created 68 private labels, right? That's massive. They're competing, putting Amazon's, and not all of their private labels have Amazon in the name, but Amazon Basics is one of those where you're like, woo, that is, they have usurped everybody's data. They have learned from it intelligently. They've created their own product lines, priced it intelligently, and now you're at it, you're done, right? So all those people are going to leave. My prediction is those people are going to leave Amazon to spin up their own stores. If you're a store builder, you're like, hey, if this is good, if there's a shot here, if you have a hook or something special, yeah, I'll get in partnership with you and let's go build this out and chase it down, right? So the private label folks, that's a big deal. More and more people are spinning up stores and doing drop shipping, right? Partnering with some other solution that builds out, manufactures the product. So again, if you know how to do that, if you know how to connect those dots, that's fantastic. If you're a store builder who is predominantly focused on conversion, or attracting new customers. There's never been a better time to be a store builder and to step into those, you know, food and pet supplies and, you know, clothing, right? Men's clothing in the you know, monthly shippable box, right? Yeah. Stuff is taken off and you're like, yeah, but I know how to build that. Great. Let's partner, right? Take a clothing manufacturer who's trying to get out the door and you, right? And put them together and suddenly you have a new shippable product for men's clothing, women's clothing, what have you, right? Though men's clothing, I think, is running up the charts much faster than women's clothing, right?
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So it's very interesting, right? But I think the difference, and this is a broad generalization, I think women have always cared a little bit more about what they look like than men. And now men are like, wait, I can look okay and not care still. Like I can continue to not care, but still look better because you ship me my clothes in a box. I'll sign up for that. Right. So, it's just seen great growth over the last year and a half. So, that's where you go, okay, you know, but I know how to do that. I know how to build a subscription-based product. And we're seeing, right, some reports that come out where people are more interested in leasing content than in owning it, right? So you think about Hulu and Netflix and every other Amazon Prime streaming services, and you go, well, that's, yes, there's a streaming component of digital download and there's a subscription component we're paying monthly. There's a ton of people who are stepping into this. I know how to do that. So this is a great time to partner.
Okay. On a related note, as we kind of look at maybe this as a trend that's going to pick up in 2019, what are some skills that you recommend store builders have in market? You know, if you don't have this skill set yet, you're going to want it this year.
Right. So yeah, similar to what we just talked about, right? Yeah. Understanding how the dropship model works, understanding how subscription works, right? The last couple of years, I've talked to so many people about how Recurly works, right? A subscription platform that you can integrate in. And customers come in saying, okay, but I like, it's not just bill every month, right? Like you've probably used Dropbox, right? Dropbox has a flat fee until you cross a certain line of how much disk you're using, and then it jumps to another tier, right? That's utilization-based pricing. The pricing changes based on how much you use. Well, Recurly is a subscription platform that works with utilization-based pricing, but it also works with flat fee pricing, but it also works with add-ons, right? So how well do you know subscription-oriented pricing platforms so that you can not only know which one to pick, but also then how to integrate it into the rest of a site, right? So that becomes really, really important.
Okay, great. My last question, this is kind of out of left field here, but I saw some research on partnerships that said you should look at partnering with millennials just because they're so interconnected. Do you have any thoughts about partnering with that specific type of people and what you can expect?
So this is a trick question, right? Because no matter how I answer it, right, I'm going to annoy someone.
Okay.
Right? You're just like, wait, yeah. Did he just say something bad about millennials, right? Or right. He said something good about them? What is he doing, right? I think what you're capturing and the critical component of it is people have never been more disinclined to believe marketing as they do today, right? People have, that we're at an all-time low when it comes to the credibility of a marketing message. So we don't trust what you write about your product. We trust what our friends say about your product. And that's not specific to millennials, but they do know how to get that word out faster with more technology than anyone has ever been able to do, right? I just got my daughter, who's 13, an Instagram account. I'm not sure if that's even compliant with the terms of service, and I'm announcing this publicly, but yes. I just got her an account. I've had an Instagram account for 2 years. She got it, and she immediately did something on the screen, right? Like she double-clicked a picture or something. And I said, what'd you just do? And she goes, I liked the photo. How do you not know how to like a photo? And I'm like, oh, I just moved to the bottom, and I clicked the little heart. She's like, oh, my God, you're so slow, right? And you're just like, I didn't realize there was another thing you could do. And then she goes to the stories and she's like, well, if you want a story, you tap, it'll go to the next screen. But if you hold down or you push something, then it goes through the whole thing. And then if you slide it all the way across, then it changes it. I'm like, there's like a hidden manual and I didn't know what it was, right? Yeah. So yes, part of what happens is there's a younger generation that knows how to use the tools to get the word out. But the fundamental premise here, right, is that most of us are disinclined to believe the marketing messages that a company themselves gives us, which the byproduct of that means that if you are a store owner, right, you're a lot better off with case studies than you are with marketing text. And if you're a store builder, you're a lot better off teaching the store owner to collect case studies and present them, because then it's not your word. Now it's someone else's word, right? It's the client saying how they experience the product. I don't know if you're like me, but I go to Amazon and the first thing I do is I scroll down to read all the comments, right?
Yeah.
I'm reading reviews because I trust the reviews more than I trust what Toshiba or Samsung is going to tell me about their product. I want to know what everyday people have to say about their product. So that's, reviews are a big deal. Case studies are a big deal. And I think millennials, if you're going to partner with someone with the goal of getting the word out, I can imagine why that would be very attractive.
Okay, great. All right, Chris, that's all the time we have this week. Thank you so much. That was really helpful.
Awesome. Take care, Ryan.
All right, thanks. All right, folks, there you have it. That wraps up my conversation with Chris Lemma. He shared a ton of valuable insights and advice today on how to assess and develop partnerships that will work for you. We also shared some tools and resources, which will all be linked up in the show notes. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Please consider subscribing, sharing with a friend, or leaving us a review in your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, best of luck in all that you do, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Store Builders Podcast.